Good morning and welcome to this morning's podcast at investorideas.com. Today I'm talking to Roger Cressy, partner at Mountain Wave Ventures. Roger is a cybersecurity and counterterrorism expert with years of experience and insight. He gives us a historical and future view of cybersecurity, how AI is playing a current and future role, and what to look for as an investor in the space. Roger's government service included senior cybersecurity and counterterrorism positions in the Clinton and Bush administrations.
Thanks again for joining us today, Roger. I wanted to follow up on our March conversation and talk about some of the recent events in both of your expertise areas, cybersecurity and counterterrorism, because there's been a lot going on there, and revisit some of the key themes that we talked about. So some of the breaking news that's happened this week is the Hamas leader believed to be, you know, the person that orchestrated the militant group's October 7th, 23 attack on Gaza was killed on Wednesday, according to the military. So from your perspective, what does that change in the balance of power, if anything, and what do you see happening here moving forward?
Well, Dawn, it's a massive victory, I think, in the fight against Hamas. And some in Israel equate Sinwar's death to when we eliminated Osama bin Laden. And I think there's a lot of truth to that. But if you step back, there's two things at play. One is the Israelis have achieved massive military success against Hamas's infrastructure, its leadership. And really, they are at a point where as a viable fighting force, it's unclear how strong they will be going forward. Pockets of resistance for sure, but coordinated attacks, I think, are definitely not an immediate concern. Second part of it is from a political perspective. You know, this is the opportunity now for the Israeli government to say, we've achieved our strategic objectives in Gaza. We've eliminated the leadership responsible for October 7th. We've massively degraded Hamas's ability to conduct military operations against Israel. And we're now in a position to focus on how do we get the hostages home through a ceasefire. Ceasefire, hostages released, and you could begin the process of not necessarily a political settlement, but creating a peacekeeping, peace enforcement construct that can most importantly reduce the risk to the tens of thousands of Gazans who had nothing to do with Hamas, but yet are in a terrible state of suffering right now. It's going to be up to Netanyahu and his cabinet. Do they believe that's the way to go? And I'm skeptical that Netanyahu will go that route. I believe he should. You can still prosecute the war in the north against Hezbollah, which also has had some significant victories. But that's the decision point right now.
One of the things, correct me if I'm wrong, but this is just my perspective, that's really different right now in terms of, you know, defining terrorism in your own backyard or what you might be seeing, is for the first time in Canada, we're really seeing these pro-Palestinian protests become very different. We're seeing the Canadian flag being burned. We're seeing rioting. We're seeing buildings being broken into, smashed. It's not necessarily peaceful protests right now in terms of how the average Canadian would see that. And you see that in the UK. I'm just wondering, it seems to be a shift, and what is interesting is that the governments here aren't really stopping it. So it's created a new wave of terrorism that I see, that people are afraid to even say anything about it, because if you say anything about it, you're considered, it's not racism, but it's people are afraid to even speak up and defend their own country, that they're not safe in their streets right now.
Well, and we've seen this in the States to a certain degree, and it's definitely playing out in the academic world on campuses around the country. The challenge, I think, is many in the Palestinian community see what's happened to what I would call the innocent Gazan population and have felt incredibly frustrated over their inability to affect change, which is right. They can't affect change. And as a result, they're taking to more and more extreme actions and measures. the net result of that is actually not constructive for their argument, and it doesn't compel or persuade people to be more sympathetic to the cause they're supporting. And that conflict, if you will, plays out all the time right now. And so that's why I think the ceasefire, to focus, now that Sinwar is dead, to focus on how do we get to that next phase is important. Because if you get to that, now that you've destroyed the military leadership, now that you've totally degraded their ability to conduct offensive operations, you can look at some of the political actions, which if they're taken, will begin to reduce the motivation by some of the extreme elements in the Palestinian community to conduct the type of violent demonstrations that have led to this type of this type of situation.
Well, I think we're all rooting for peace in all of these wars that are going on. Personally, I'm not an advocate of war. I think, you know, living in this atmosphere of not knowing what's next is pretty frightening, and I really hope that it gets resolved on that front. Another event that I don't think got enough attention, but I looked at it because we look at public companies and the activities that go on there, was the recent cyber attack against American Water Works. And being that they're the largest water utility in the U.S., I thought it should have received more attention, but it didn't. Yeah. And I'm just wondering if you can comment on that.
Well, what you saw with that, I think, is an example of what the Biden administration and a lot of cybersecurity experts have talked about for some time, which is critical infrastructure sectors that are at the highest risk and have the minimum necessary resources. So high risk, low resource sectors, and health not as much, but water really is one of the big priorities. Education, I think, is another example of high risk, low resource. But the water, the ability of actors, and it's not just sophisticated actors, it's some very rudimentary actors to get into these municipalities, much less some of the larger organizations, and really wreak havoc from a ransomware perspective, from a malware perspective. I can tell you that is a frontline concern. The problem, of course, is how do you provide resources and support to them? And that's where the government has really tied itself up in knots, because they have not done enough to help what I'd call small, medium-sized businesses. A lot of these water entities fall in that rubric, giving them what they need. And so this has to be something we look at next year in the next administration of, we've got to give more support to high-risk, low-resource sectors.
I did read a report in May that they said cyber attacks against water utilities were increasing across the country. And one of the things, I think it was on CBS, they reported and pointed out was that a lot of the onus was put on the actual corporations, as you just discussed, and a lot of them aren't prepared. They're just not set up to handle a cyber attack on any level, especially on anything sophisticated. So you just sort of addressed that, but looking at moving forward, what do you think the role of responsibility is for the government? Because if this is critical infrastructure, which it is, should the onus just be put on the company, or should there be more support and resources from the government?
Well, you know, the cyber bingo card mark is, you know, critical infrastructure is owned and operated by the private sector, and so the government has limited ability to affect it. I think that has always been a bit of a red herring, because while that is the case, there are plenty of regulatory requirements. Now, certain sectors are different, right? Whether it's telco, financial services, energy, they are heavily regulated. There's a lot of experience and a lot of resources. But some of these smaller ones, you have to have the government provide greater resources to them. And, you know, where CISA, Cybersecurity Infrastructure Security Agency, has done well is promoting messages and providing free tools and giving guidance through advisories and the like about where the threat environment is evolving to. But they're still not providing sufficient support and help. And I think that has to be a priority, because you don't need the government to help the financial services sector. They've got their act together, probably better than we do. But the smaller, high at risk, low resource sectors, they need more support. And so it requires two things: Congress allocating funds for it, which is difficult in these days, and then the federal agencies, the Sector Risk Management Agency, in particular for water, providing support to these municipalities and these water entities so that they can better prepare themselves and defend themselves.
I think a bigger question too, in looking at this, they you know, got it resolved and dealt with it pretty effectively and immediately. But what if they can't? That's the question is, what if the largest water utility gets hacked and they can't resolve it? What is the contingency plan for something like that, or is there one?
Well, the government does have the ability to, what I would say, deploy teams to help with incident response. And they've done that in other occasions. And I think even in this specific instance, there was a fair amount of communication. So if it turns into something that really has ramifications beyond a limited area, then you can see the government providing those resources. But the problem always is you don't want to be in a situation where you're doing it after the fact. And so as the sectors are being assessed for their resiliency, for their ability to defend themselves, the government kind of has to do its own matrix of all right, who needs our services the most right now and where can we help? And that, I think, is just a question of funding priorities and also a question of what do you have in terms of people and capabilities to provide support to these localities.
And I noticed that right away, again, because I cover public companies. But what are you seeing that would be in parallel to that, that would be similar to something of critical infrastructure, that something like that's happened? Are you seeing any recent events that we should be aware of or that are serious that we should be paying attention to?
Well, the big one, and we talked about this back in the spring, is what we're seeing by the Chinese. And so we've seen what we call the typhoon class of threat actors. So Volt Typhoon, Salt Typhoon, Flax Typhoon, and the FBI, CISA, and others have been very public in talking about their activities. All very different activities, but taken in their totality, a sustained effort by the Chinese government and their intelligence services to penetrate our critical infrastructure at a level that is unprecedented in recent history. And they've had fantastic success in doing so. Now, we're also achieving some tactical wins. We're identifying where they're in, and we're knocking them out, and we're doing our best to create greater resiliency in these areas. But we're not alone. The Chinese are also looking at Canadian infrastructure. And any ally of the United States, in the context of who might provide support to Taiwan in the event there is ever type of a hostility scenario play out there, the Chinese are looking at those potential adversaries and conducting cyber operations to ensure they're in a position, should hostilities arise, that they can use cyber tools to disrupt our ability to support and respond the Taiwanese in that crisis. And other countries that have national interests in the Asian Pacific region are also being targeted by the Chinese. So that, to me, that is still the biggest one. And we really need to be paying greater attention to it. And I give the government credit for making the awareness by the public on it higher than it's ever been. But this is a very, very serious problem.
It's interesting talking about China. I know in Canada recently, our prime minister has been bringing up Russian influence on elections and interference here in Canada, even though it was already proven that there was direct interference in our last election from China. What are you hearing? I mean, it seems to be everybody brings up Russia every time, anytime when it's directly related to elections. What are you hearing and seeing about your election coming up right now?
Well, we're seeing tremendous attempts by all the usual suspects, by the Russians, the Chinese, the Iranians, and even the North Koreans at the margins, to try and inject misinformation, disinformation, malign information into the public discourse to create a suspicion in the part of the American electorate that the elections are not going to be safe, they're not going to be secure, there's a potential for cheating, all of the usual themes. And we're certainly also seeing the use of artificial intelligence tools, which was predicted to happen, and this certainly is underway right now as well. So, I always get very frustrated with, we're worried about misinformation. But the bottom line is, you as an individual have to be willing to be, you have to be susceptible to it. You know, you have to be willing to accept some of this misinformation at face value and have an impact and influence you. And so it comes back to the individual. Of course, the Russians and the Chinese and others are going to try and mess with us. Our job, our personal responsibility, our citizen responsibility is to be smart enough to see what it is and not just take some of the silliness at face value. You have to be a little more, not questioning, but you have to be a little more willing to look below the initial layer of what you read or see these days and rely on trusted news sources with editorial control that are just reporting and not trying to seek to influence in a way that is contrary to what the broader debate in the political arena is. And that's not easy. I get it. But it's what we got to do.
You have to admit some of the artificial intelligence memes are pretty funny, though.
Oh, without a doubt.
Some of them are very well done. I mean, I could sit and laugh all day. I mean, I don't have time to do that, but some of them are very well done. And I mean, you do realize if you have any intelligence that they're not real, but they're pretty funny. They're very entertaining.
Without a doubt. I mean, you know, everyone here deserves a for creativity. But I come back to, you know, if you're in a bubble where you're only getting information from one particular data news feed, it's just going to reinforce everything you already believe. And, you know, the Schoolhouse Rock person in me says you have to look at other sources of information to understand the bigger picture. But they've got to be trusted, verified sources of information and not just the stuff that reinforces your own opinion, like, uh-huh, exactly, I knew it was that way. Well, not necessarily.
Well, unfortunately, when people use Google as a search engine, the algorithms actually do that. They if you've looked at five things that are a certain opinion or a certain mindset, they keep sending you that. So even when you search, I think a lot of people don't understand. If I did a search and you did a search and five other people did a search based on our previous content use, we'd all get different results. We'd get results based on the algorithms of what we've clicked on and of what we've read. So in fairness, I don't think a lot of people understand that. So when they keep getting the same message reinforced, it becomes believable because of the search engine algorithms.
Without a doubt. And so let me tell you how I combat that. So I'm pretty much a centrist on most issues, but I'll read the Wall Street Journal opinion page, for example. I probably disagree with 75% of what they write, but it's important for me to understand where they're coming from. And there are times where they make points I'm like, oh yeah, I get that. That makes a lot of sense. But I have to seek that out. Trusted news source, recognized, editorial controlled, and it's not trying to spin a specific algorithmic feed to me. And then if I read the Washington Post or the New York Times, I then have a broader perspective as to what the issues are and how they're being reported and how they're being presented. But if I'm relying just on a social media feed for my news, I need to remember I'm being fed what the algorithm believes I'm interested in, not what I necessarily should be interested in. And this is a conversation I have with my 20-something children all the time, but it's also applicable to all of us, right?
And I think you're the exception, not the rule, though. Most people, they don't have time or they don't they're not aware because there's no warnings. There's no warnings when you're doing these searches that this is biased or this is based on your search pattern. So if a person doesn't have that education level of how this really works, they're not even going to realize that they're being fed the same information. They're just going to think that their viewpoint is right because they're seeing it over and over again. That's a big issue. It's a really big issue. And I don't know who resolves that or who's responsible for that. I think the search engines and some of these social media platforms using artificial intelligence we've talked about that before. It's negligent and I think it's culpable in some respects because the average person is just an average person. They're paying their hydro bill, they're going to work, they're trying to feed their kids. They don't have time to read 15 different sources and be independent on what they're thinking. They're just trying to read what they read, and they've got 15 or 20 minutes to do it, and they're being spoon-fed. So I think it's a huge issue. And we talked about the role of artificial intelligence, not just in information, but in cybersecurity and all the technology that we're using. And one of the things we really focused on in our last conversation is there a watchdog? Have you seen any improvement in that arena?
I'm still increasingly disappointed and skeptical. The ability of holding the social media companies accountable has been one of our greatest failures in the United States over the past decade plus. The inability to look at Section 230 of the 1996 Telecommunications Act, which basically serves as the foundation for all of these social media companies to be viewed as platforms that are not being held accountable for the information they put on those platforms. 230 is kind of a get-out-of-jail-free card, has been used to prevent any type of serious oversight, accountability, and regulation. That has been our greatest failure, hands down, and that still is the case. And I think no matter who wins our presidential election, you're not going to see an improvement. The second part is Congress has fundamentally failed in their duties and obligations to do something in this area. We can't even pass a child privacy data law, and we've had some elements of success there, but a comprehensive one on something that should be as easy as the sea and the sun in the sky, we fall apart on. So I look at all that, and I'm very discouraged that there's anything that is going to move the needle on it. So what it comes down to is it comes down to the individual. So let me give you an example of an individual who's doing some fantastic work. Craig Newmark, who is the founder of Craigslist, a philanthropist now, incredibly successful businessman. He has made cybersecurity education awareness one of his priorities, one of his legacy initiatives. And so he just launched something called the Take 9 Initiative. And I would encourage people to look at it online, because what it does, using science and data, it says if you pause 9 seconds before you click on an email, before you forward a document that you think might be a tad suspicious, that 9 seconds is scientifically proven to give you enough of a break not to do that, not to contribute to the cybersecurity problem, not to be the person that, you know, connects malware into a network that leads to all sorts of consequences. So that's about the individual. And he's focused on critical infrastructure. We've got to make our critical infrastructure more secure. So if he can do that, and he has the resources to do it, and it's fantastic through Take 9, that's where we should be pushing people to take their own individual accountability. Because, Don, I get what you're saying about people have limited time. But if you subscribe to the feed from the CBC in Canada, you're going to get pretty much a down-the-middle report of the news of the day. You're not getting reporting that's seeking to entertain you as well as inform you. And I think that's, in the social media realm, that's a huge issue. Are we looking to be entertained? Are we looking to be informed? Is it a bit of both? Okay, let's understand what's pure entertainment, and let's understand what's factual data information to inform.
Well, I'd have to disagree with you on the CBC because they're funded and supported by the federal government. So there is an influence. You know, I look at my industry and the securities regulations. I have to disclose any payment I receive for any content that I put out. But when you look at I think mainstream media needs to be changed to corporate media, because a lot of them, in my opinion, this is just my opinion, operate almost like a PR agency versus a news agency. There's no neutrality. It's very biased, and it's very much influenced. If the person that is paying your paycheck tells you to go on a certain agenda, you're going to do it. You're very much influenced. They're funded massively by the government. And I think that's a concern with a lot of people in the States and in different countries, is the trust of what we used to call mainstream media as a neutral source, and looking at journalism as heroes for telling us the truth and the story. I think that era is disappearing very quickly.
Well, the days of one source of information that informs you, long gone. But the CBC is also a verified media outlet, right? You do not have an algorithm specifically trying just to feed you. Now, are there biases? Absolutely. There's biases in every mainstream media source. And you can go non-mainstream media sources as well. But just understand that what's seeking to entertain you and what's seeking to inform you and the impact it has on you is something to be aware of. And that's the challenge. Government is not going to solve this for you. Industry is definitely not going to solve it. Because remember, industry has a fiduciary responsibility to their shareholders. They do not have a fiduciary responsibility to, you know, ensuring your son or daughter does not get harmful content in their media feed. They don't care about that. They care about, are they performing their fiduciary responsibilities, particularly if they're a publicly traded company.
Well, I see firsthand, looking at the history of our business and our website, there used to be such a limited number of competitors within the sectors that we cover. And now with TikTok and Instagram, and I mean, there's new content coming in thousands and thousands and thousands every day. So from a consumer standpoint, they're just bombarded. They're inundated with content on a consistent basis. And as I said, I think it's a very difficult job for the average individual to really cipher through that and look what's real, what's not, who's verified, who's not. A lot of them are, you know, they will get attracted to a personality that's feeding them the news, whether that's humor or someone that's very, you know, on one side or the other. So it's not easy. It's not easy to find the truth or to find even something that is neutral. It's so difficult nowadays.
But what people can do is you can have an entertainer and you really enjoy their opinion, enjoy their perspectives. If they start getting into places where they have no subject matter expertise, you've got to have the awareness to say, well, that's your opinion, but you're not a scientist. You're not a doctor. What do you, if you're going to spin this, just tell me you're spinning it, but let's take some user accountability. You know, the sky is blue. If somebody in your social media says the sky is yellow, and the reason why the sky is yellow is because so-and-so political actor or scientist is at fault, you should be able to say, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. I can't accept that as fact. But people are too willing to say, huh, well, they're funny, you know, they entertain me. Oh, maybe the sky is blue. Maybe the government's lying to me. Maybe there's a conspiracy. Maybe the man or the woman are looking to beat me down. Oh, my God. You know, I think I've said this to you before, Don. You know, when I would give public talks about, you know, what is the government hiding? And I said, well, here's the thing about government conspiracies. One, they give the government too much credit. We're just human beings like you and me, and, you know, we are not that good at keeping secrets. And two, the government can't keep the type of conspiratorial secrets you wish. And I think people always want, particularly people who are feeling frustrated, they want simple explanations to complex and difficult problems. And in your social media feed, and if you have certain voices in your life are giving simple explanations, then that just makes it easier for them to move on. But democracy is a participation sport. You got to get out there. You got to take the time. I'm sorry. You know, you can't skate through it. You got to fasten your seatbelt, right?
I think you nailed it, that people are frustrated. And I think if people were happier in their lives and weren't as financially stressed and worried about war all over the world. I think if people just could live their life, they wouldn't even be reading most of this. They'd be outside playing ball with their kids. They'd be in the park. They'd be having a picnic somewhere. I think people are bombarded with the reality of their life too. And then when you're frustrated, you try to seek answers. If you're happy, you don't need to look anywhere except out in your backyard.
No, that's true. And we should all be getting outside more anyway. So that's the public service announcement out of today's podcast.
I agree wholeheartedly. And anything that we've missed here that you think we should talk about in closing? I think we've had a pretty good conversation here.
Well, I'll go back to the individual and the user. Whether it is your cybersecurity questions, it comes down to the user. You have responsibility and obligation. When it comes down to social media and the fears of misinformation, disinformation, you have a responsibility and an obligation. And just know the threat environment is not going to get better. It's only going to get worse. So again, it comes down to the individual. And no, I appreciate, Don, your work to help it to educate and inform people. And let's just keep doing that, because I think at the end of the day, that's where success can be achieved.
Great. Thank you very much. I'm always a fan of empowering people on any level. So thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. InvestorIdeas.com is a go-to platform for big investing ideas. From breaking stock news to top-rated investing podcasts, we cover it all. Our original branded content includes podcasts such as Exploring Mining, Clean Tech, Crypto Corner, Cannabis News, and the AII. To learn more about our site, go to investorideas.com. Our site does not make recommendations for purchases or sale of stocks, services, or products. Nothing on our site should be construed as an offer or solicitation to buy or sell products or securities. All investing involves risk and possible losses. Paid content is always disclosed. Global investors must adhere to regulations of each country. Please read the investorideas.com privacy policy on our website. Thanks and have a great day.